Good morning. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
You know it's Easter because Ryan and I are both wearing ties and jackets, you know? I mean, that's a dead giveaway. Like, it's, you know, the only two times a year we ever dress up, Easter and Christmas Eve. So you know today must be really special because Brent put on a tie, which never happens. You have to get married or die for that to happen, so... Well, my name is Brent, and I'm the lead pastor here at Ashworth Road, and we really are glad that you're here. If there's ever a day that is worth celebrating, it is today, where we reflect and we remember the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You know, I don't know about you, but I love a good oxymoron. Anybody? You like oxymorons? I mean, some of them make me laugh, and some of them just annoy me, like jumbo shrimp. That's a great one, right? I mean, that one makes me laugh. That's hilarious, jumbo shrimp, you know, or awfully good. You're awfully good. Oh, that's great, right? Awfully good. All right. What's this next one? Same difference. Now, that one just annoys me for some reason. When people say that to me, oh, which is it? This. Oh, same difference. No, same or different. Which one is it? It's just, you know, that's a pet peeve of mine. Or even better, one of my even more favorite ones, working vacation, huh? Right? Can I get an amen on that one? What's a working vacation, right? Good golly. If we move beyond just these two words that we pair together and we expand to an idea or a concept, we come up with what's called a paradox, a concept that appears to present an impossible situation. So we may see a paradox in a phrase like this, I always lie. Was that a lie or is that the truth? Which one is it, right? See, it took you a set. Somebody caught it there. I heard you. That's a paradox. Or this. What about this one? What happens when an unstoppable object faces an immovable object? What happens when an unstoppable object faces an immovable object? It's a paradox. We don't know, right? Or the one that was said in Alice in Wonderland by the white hare that I think... demonstrates or is exemplified in my life is when the rabbit said, the hurrier I go, the behinder I get. Can I get an amen on that one? Man, it seems like Easter week, this whole week, the faster I tried to go, the more behind I got. You know, spending just a few minutes on statements like this will make our brains hurt when we really think about them. Yet sometimes when we approach the Bible, isn't the Bible sometimes just like that? As we read certain things that are said or we're called to do or live certain ways, that it almost seems like a paradox. It seems to be contradictory. It doesn't seem to be able to make sense because Jesus called us to live. He called us to step out of this world and not just live as this world lives, but he called us to live to a higher calling, to be a citizen of a new kingdom. And yet when we read what the citizens of this new kingdom are supposed to be like, we find that it's very contradictory. Very oxymoronic or paradoxical, because it usually calls us to defy the way we've been raised or the way we see so many people living around us. And so today we're going to begin this brand new series, and we're going to address some of these apparent paradoxes in the Bible. We're going to look at what it means for us to step outside the norm, to live the way Jesus lived and how he calls us to live, and to see what it means for us to live life upside down. And since this is Easter, there's no better place to start than by looking at what Jesus has to say about how we have true life. How do we save our life? How do we live in such a way where there's meaning and purpose and not just existence? You know, this is one of the greatest philosophical and existential questions that humanity has always struggled with. What is the value of my life? Has anybody here ever struggled with that? I know I have. What is the value of my life? How do I move beyond just existing to actually living a life of purpose and meaning?
Late 80s, and my husband had hurt his back really bad, didn't know if he could continue doing the line of work that he'd been doing. He decided that he would open his own retail store, and I was very supportive. Then he suggested that I might want to get a job because he had no idea how things were going to go. In fact, the way he explained it to me was, it's make it or break it time. So after I quit hyperventilating, because I'd been a stay-at-home mom for a long time, I managed to land a position as a secretary at a real estate company, and he opened the shop. We would work every day, all week, and and then on weekends we would do trade shows. We soon became empty nesters, and then we really threw ourselves into work. As the years went on, I became licensed and had an opportunity to get into management. Of course, with promotions came more responsibility and more hours. We really enjoyed our work, but it was really becoming a case of being on a fast treadmill and a juggling act. In the meantime, our daughter got married, and then grandkids came. And in my spare time, I would try to visit my mom, who was elderly, every 2 to 3 weeks on the weekends. And then my husband eventually decided to sell the shop and retire. But I was working more hours than ever. But that all came to a crushing halt about 3 years ago when my mom was diagnosed with an aggressive type of lymphoma. I quit my job immediately and went to stay with her and take care of her for the remaining time that she had left. In just a matter of months, everything had changed. My life had done a complete 180. She was gone and my job had been filled. So I was kind of forced to reprioritize my life. And that's when I began thinking it might be nice to have a church home again. So I started visiting churches, 6 or 7 of them. I was about to give up when I stumbled onto the website for Ashworth Road. I was ready for a difference in my life at that point. In management, we have a saying that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. I think that applies to our church as well. It's so satisfying to feel part of something that's so much bigger than yourself. But the nicest thing about coming to church here is the way I feel when I leave. I feel renewed, and I feel like my heart and my mind is focused on God all week long as a result. I never had a position that was just 40 hours a week, except in the very beginning as a secretary. It quickly evolved into more and more responsibility and more, then management just got completely out of control because I was salaried and I, could work as many hours as I wanted. And getting so many interruptions during the day, everything got pushed to the back of my plate, and then the way I would make up for it was at night, I wish I could do that part over, I guess. Especially when everything went from 100 miles an hour to absolutely zero, then I had a lot of time to kind of think about things. And when my mom was sick and I was taking care of her, I had time to start reflecting about things and try to, figure out what really mattered. And I don't think in the end that it's going to be, how many hours you work. What's really important is, how you feel about yourself, your relationship with God, the things that you try to do to make a difference for Him.
What a powerful story, isn't it? What a powerful story. And as I watched that, I know that so many pieces of Janine's story spoke directly to me. As she shared the things that she did about running on that treadmill at 100 miles an hour, asking those important questions about life and trying to figure out, is this all there is? Is there more to life than this? You see, Janine was living life like many of us do. We're just living life. We're going through it. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad life. In fact, it can be a good life. And yet we can still find ourselves searching for something more. Searching for that happiness. Searching for fulfillment. And we do everything we feel like we're supposed to do. We do everything that we think everyone expects us to do. We get up on that treadmill, and before we know it, we are going 100 miles an hour, and we're going faster, and the faster it goes, the further away the things we really want seem to be. Maybe the circumstances of your life have forced you to slow down and start asking some serious questions. Maybe today you're just sitting here and you just think to yourself, you know what? I'm really just tired of running. How can you find life? That's what I want us to consider today. How do we find life? In the Gospels, we find a story. And it's a very significant story because it's not just recorded in one gospel. It's actually recorded in all four. And if you really, you know, think about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the number of stories that they share and overlap are very few and far between. But there's one story that each of them hit in some level to communicate. And either it means that it's so valuable and so important we need to stand up and pay attention, or we know that it's something that Jesus said so often that his disciples just had it ingrained within their lives. And we find it in all the Gospels, but we're going to look today at Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8. If you want to follow along the Pew Bible, it's page 820 in the Pew Bible. We're going to read Mark chapter 8, and we're just going to look at a few verses to where we see what Jesus is calling to us and how he answers the question, how do you have life? So Mark chapter 8, we're going to start reading in verse 34. Here's what it says. It says, "Then he called to the crowd to him along with his disciples, and Jesus said, 'Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul?'" Just on its face value, in order to live, we have to die. In order to have life, we have to deny ourselves. In order to truly have a real meaningful existence, it involves taking up our cross. This is one of the craziest things that I think Jesus could have ever said. It makes no sense at all. It runs so counter to everything we ever hear. But if we know that the more we try to hang on to things, the more we try to grab onto life in our own power and in our own way, we know it's like the sand that the harder we grip continues to just pour out the bottom. None of this makes rational sense. How could this be? Because from our perspective, this is certainly upside down. The world tells us just the opposite. What are the statements that the world tells you in order to find life and to have meaning and purpose in how you live? The world says, you do it, you achieve, you go, look out for number one, take care of yourself, make a name for yourself. You know what? You want to have meaning? Work hard. You want to have meaning? Get your name on that list in that business journal so that people will go, wow, look at this individual. Not just that, play hard, acquire stuff. That's what we hear constantly bombarding us. It says this is how we're told to live. But I don't know. I know I've faced the question. Have you faced that question? The question? Is this all there is? Is this all there is to life? The rat race, the achieving, the acquiring. Is the value of your life nothing worth nothing more than your earning potential? Jesus speaks into this very question that so many of us ask, and he tells us that, yeah, if you focus on yourself, the existence of your life will equal what you can acquire, the name you can make for yourself. For some, that's it. But even as Jesus speaks these words, it highlights for us this incredible reality that there are going to be people, possibly even some of you this morning, that have gained everything that your heart's desired. You married the person you wanted. You have the family that you wanted. You've got the job you've wanted. The bank account sit. Well, the bank account never sits where you want it, but maybe you're close. Maybe that's just the Clark house. I don't know. You know, the 401k is growing. You're taking some nice vacations every year. You have everything that the world could possibly offer you. But when you look at it, you still find that emptiness. You still find a desire for more that doesn't seem to ever be satisfied. And you begin to ask, all the things that I've acquired, all the status that I've achieved, what's been the price tag for all that? What Jesus is telling the crowd that day, and he's telling us this. He says, we have to understand that there will always be things competing for our attention. There will always be things grasping for your eyes to look at, to pull you away, to say, hey, this is what's most important. Hey, this is where you should focus. There will always be things clamoring for your mind and your attention. There will always be something that is shinier. There will always be something more attractive, more fun. After all, I mean, let's just be honest. Who thinks this? You know what? My life is great, but you know what would make it better? I should become a Christian. You can laugh. That's a joke. Nobody ever thinks that, right? No, very rarely do people say, you know what? I think that's the answer to my life. Because when it's asked, many already say, I like my life. I have a good life. And let me tell you what, I'm not here to convince you otherwise. But I would ask you this. What if in living the good life, you are sacrificing true life, abundant life? And it's hard for us to understand that because we're inundated with commercials and media and movies, and we're inundated with neighbors who have things and have stuff. And man, those commercials and those ads, don't they look happy? And we think, that's what I want. And again, as we consider this, this is upside down thinking. There's a little bit of us that is fearful, that says, what if I go for this? What if I give my life to Jesus? What if I give myself to something greater? I do what Jesus said, and on the end, I'm still unfulfilled. I think that's a big question that keeps us from being able to move forward with Jesus. What if in living the good life, we're sacrificing true life? And I do want to qualify that statement here as well. I didn't say the easy life or the trouble-free life, because I think all of us know that life doesn't exist for anyone. But what if everything you've been reaching for can only be found by sacrificing the good to get something even better? That's what Jesus is telling us in what we read this morning. Jesus knows that all these things competing for our attention, for our devotion, and that an unwillingness for us to give all is really an unwillingness for us to give any. We try to come to Jesus on our own terms, in our own way, and we think, I'm going to just put Jesus in this little corner. And Jesus says, that's not how it works. And that's why when Jesus makes this statement, it's a very black and white statement. Because he understands that if we ever hold on to any little bit of ourselves, that we'll never completely sacrifice everything for him. If we want to experience fulfillment in life, not the ones in movies or TV, but real satisfaction, it requires more than making Jesus a part of our life. It means giving him our entire lives, not just a tiny bit, not a small portion, but everything, all or nothing. There are no half measures in this journey with Jesus. So in this upside down system, how do we save our lives? What do we do? Hang on, because this upside down way of looking at life is about to become probably the greatest challenge that you have ever faced in your life. In verse 34, Jesus tells us this. He says, if you want to become his disciple, if you want to know what life truly is about, to keep from forfeiting your soul, he mentions three conditions that we have to follow. Very quickly, these are very basic and very easy to say, but much harder to live. The first one is deny yourself. You have to deny yourself. Now, right away, I can hear your thoughts. Deny what? Deny myself what? You think about that for just a moment. What are you willing to give up for Jesus? Let me stop you right there. That's the problem. Because, see, we think that coming to Jesus means being willing to give up my stuff. Oh, okay, Jesus, we just ended the season of Lent, and I gave up meat for you for 40 days. Jesus never asked you to give up meat. Jesus never asked you to give up stuff. Jesus asked you to give up you. And there is a big, big, huge, massive difference between the two. Jesus doesn't care about your stuff. He cares about you. He wants you. In fact, I heard it said this week. It said, the hardest thing to give is in. Now, my staff would probably say, Brent just made that statement. Mr. Stubborn, yes, he did. Because I know what it's like in my marriage and in my job to hold hard and fast and say, nope, I am not giving in. I am stubborn. I'm staying right here. And Jesus looks and says, well, then you can't come to me. You can't follow. Because, yeah, it's easy if Jesus said, you know what, you want to follow me, just write me a check. You know what? Pull out the checkbooks and let's all write a $100 check and give it to Jesus, because that's what it means to follow Jesus. And Jesus says, you know what he says? I don't need your $100. I created it all. Your $100 means very little to me. But you know what I want? I want you. And because in this crazy, messed up system that God created that's broken now because of sin, he doesn't force us to do this. He doesn't look at you and say, you will deny yourself. Do you know why? Because there's no love in that. There's no love in that slavery. There's no love in forced love at all. And what Jesus wants is people who will look at him and say, you know what? What he has, even though it doesn't make any sense, even though it is so opposite of what my physical flesh craves and my emotions desire, he wants me. And I'm willing to give him me just so I can experience that level of love. We live in a world that tells us things like this. Be your truest self. Embrace yourself. Stand up for yourself. And Jesus says, deny yourself. Could you find anything more opposite than that? This is a big statement. But what if, in the reason that Jesus says to deny yourself, is because he knows that it isn't in expressing yourself that you find out who you really are, that you can't be your truest self unless you've denied yourself, your desires, your will, and then and only then, when you're following Jesus, do you really find out who you truly are? We can't really understand who we are and what we were made to be and become unless we see ourselves the way Jesus sees us. You think the world tells you you're valuable? Absolutely not. They tell you you're valuable only if you bring something to the table, only if you have something to offer. Don't believe me? Show up to work tomorrow and just stop producing. Your boss will come in and go, well, you're still valuable. We're just going to keep paying you until you retire. If you get that, please call me. I want to apply for that job. Even in our relationships, we find that, don't we? You think you found the one and they say, oh, I'll love you forever until they don't. Everything that the world has, oh, buy this car. It's so shiny. It feels so good to ride in. Until the day after you drive it off the lot, you're in an accident. And you survive an Iowa winter that the rust starts eating out the bottom of your car. And the world is sitting here saying, no, be yourself, embrace yourself, do what we're telling you to do. And Jesus just looks and he says to you, he says, no. You will never know who you really are. You will never understand what I created you to be until you stop grabbing on so tight with everything you am saying, no, God, this is who I am. And Jesus is saying, no, deny yourself. That is how you will find out who you are and what you were made and created to be. What if in Jesus saying, deny yourself, he understands that that's the only way we can find out who we truly are? Our natural inclination is to focus on self, to look after our own interest. And Jesus says, you will never get where you really want to be doing that. He doesn't just say, lose yourself. He says, lose yourself for me. The next demand Jesus makes is to take up your cross. Take up your cross. You know, we have so popularized the image of the cross. We have crosses everywhere. We have cross tattoos. We have cross necklaces. You know, we wear it as a fashion accessory so often, but this is not what would have been in the minds of the followers of Jesus the day he said this. The day that Jesus said this, what they would have pictured is this right here on the screen. It was brutal. It was torture. It was the worst and most cruel way for someone to die. And Jesus is asking those to follow him to not just deny themselves, but to pick up the very thing that will put you to death. Wow. He doesn't just say, make a mental ascent. He says, no, I want you to grasp, I want you to embrace the very thing that is going to end your life. As one commentary put it, it says, this is the demand. When Jesus spoke these words, this is the demand that separates disciples from admirers. There are a lot of people who admire Jesus. Oh, he's a good man. Oh, he was a great teacher. Oh, he was a revolutionary. Look at the social justice things that he did. And you know, every one of those statements is true, but they can be said from somebody standing a far way away from Jesus, going, oh yeah, over there. But when Jesus says, take up your cross, there's something different. He's not talking about minor discomfort. He was speaking about death to an entire way of life, death to self-serving and self-seeking in all forms. The third part of how to find life is by following Jesus. It's this constant and ongoing. And I want you to understand this. So many times when we think about following Jesus, we want to think, oh, well, I do follow Jesus. I did that back when I was 7 years old. Nope. Following Jesus isn't a one and done proposition. It's a constant, ongoing, every day, waking up, putting one foot in front of the other, saying that today I make a conscious decision to follow Jesus every day. It's living as Jesus lived and doing what Jesus did, and it's stopping to try to find ways to fit God into our box, and it's saying, I will reorient the way I live to him, to fit him. It means we stop looking for justification in our lives for things like this. That enemy at work, how can I take him down? No, we don't get to do that anymore, because following Jesus means we no longer look to how to defeat our enemies. We figure out how to love our enemies, because that is what the way of Jesus is all about. We stop looking for a prosperity gospel that will make us wealthy and healthy and trouble-free, and realize that following Jesus means that we will have difficulty, we will have trouble, but all along the journey, he will be with us. We stop looking to see if Christianity is going to make us more comfortable. Can I let you in on something? It's not. It never will. It was never meant to. But it gives us something far greater than comfort. We stop looking for shortcuts because they don't exist, and we realize that no one becomes a disciple and experiences the life Jesus is talking about by drifting into it. We make a conscious decision each and every morning to get up and follow him, no matter where he leads. It's following Jesus into the brokenness and into the mess that this world has, to bring his light and his love to those who are desperate for it. It is bringing love to the unlovely. It's bringing peace to the restless. It's bringing hope to the hopeless. That is what Jesus is saying when he says, follow me. When he says, follow me, he doesn't say, I'm going to give you the career you wanted. He said, no, when you follow me, it may mean you have to sacrifice that promotion, because I can't have you doing that and you be who I created you to be. It may mean you don't get to live in the house that you've always wanted, because he says that's not going to get you where you need to be, but being here will. It understands that following Jesus is the ultimate and greatest thing, and it's not even walking beside him. It realizes that following Jesus is accompanying him, walking in step with him, arm in arm, understanding that he's never asking us to go somewhere he has never been. This is how we live for Jesus, and this is how we move beyond existence. What I love about what Jesus is saying here is that he's not restricted in who he's talking to. He's not just looking at a few people and say, well, you look good, so I'm talking to you. And you know what? You have the right bank account, so this, you can come on and follow me. When Jesus says this, when he makes this statement, it is a call for everyone, whoever, not the elite, not the perfect, not those who have it all together, and not the religious. It's for anyone and everyone who says, I'm ready to get off the treadmill, to stop running this rat race. Anyone who, like Janine, says, you know what I want? I want a difference in my life. Let's not fool ourselves, though. This is no light or simple moment. One pastor I read this week put it this way. He said, this is a crowd-thinning moment for Jesus. Think about that. What Jesus is saying, people weren't going, oh, did you hear that? Let's all go follow Jesus. They're like, oh, I'm going to walk away a little bit. It just got serious. This is a crowd-thinning moment for Jesus. N.T. Wright, foremost New Testament scholar of our time, says this. He says, in every generation, there are, it seems, a few people who are prepared to take Jesus seriously at his word. What would it be like if you were one of them? The question really is what price have you put on your soul? Are the trappings and the treasure this world offers so alluring that you're willing to risk it all? I mean, who would blame you? What Jesus says is so radical and upside down. But what if, on the off chance, he's right? And gaining the entire world really comes at the cost of your soul. Is it worth it? Or is it possible, even just a tiny bit possible, that in living for something bigger than yourself, something beyond yourself, giving totally and completely of yourself to him, that is where true life is found? I get that following Jesus is counterintuitive when we consider what he's calling us to. We look at that and we say, well, there goes the freedom in my life. There goes any chance for me to have any joy because I'm going to be following Jesus. Have you looked at those people? And let's be honest, most Christians don't do a really great job of demonstrating freedom and joy and those kind of things. But we do. We look at it and we say, well, there goes my chance for this in life. And yet what we find is that instead of not bringing joy or freedom, it's really the birth of real joy and real freedom. But so often we continue to fight. I read a story this week of a young man, it's many years ago now, he was rafting in Maine. And as he was rafting, he was coming up, and as he realizes he's approaching a dam, and he's going to go over. And so he positions himself to be able to go over, and he does. He goes over, but in the process, he falls out of the raft. And at the bottom, of course, where the water's hitting, there's kind of created a whirlpool. It's cold out. The water's freezing. He knows he's got to get out quickly, and he begins with all of his might to swim as far as he can to try to get out of this whirlpool that keeps sucking him back in. But the harder he swims, the less progress he makes. There were people on the shore watching this happen, but they were powerless to do anything. Finally, the cold water just overtook him, and he succumbed to hypothermia, and he died. And what happened was the whirlpool took him under, and within just a few seconds, tossed him downstream and popped him right up. It was in fighting for his life that he died. But it was when he would have died originally and given himself in, he would have lived. What a great example, I think, of us. Are you swimming? Are you trying so desperately to hold on to your life? Or are you willing to lay it down, to deny yourself and take up your cross and follow Jesus? You see, that's what Jesus is talking about here. It's a very counterintuitive thing, upside down. Jesus isn't asking us, though, to do something that he himself wasn't willing to do. And I think that's so important. He's not the individual saying, no, you go ahead and do this. Jesus modeled this for us. And is there any greater picture to see how upside down this is than what Jesus did on the cross? Put yourself there 2,000 years ago on that Friday at Calvary, at the base of that cross. Would you have felt any different than his mom or his disciples who looked and thought, it's all over. It is done. But Jesus even showed with his own life that it was in his death that true life can be found, because it was on Easter Sunday that he rose again. See, we're all giving our lives to something. What are you giving your life to? One of my favorite expressions is, I would hate to climb to the top of the ladder and realize it was leaning against the wrong wall. What wall are you leaning your ladder up against? What are you holding on to? What's giving you value? What's giving you meaning? What's giving you purpose? yeah, the world's going to make some very shiny and attractive things over here. And our flesh wants them desperately. And Jesus says, don't do that. Deny yourself. Take up your cross. Follow me. Let me show you what real life is all about. Jesus gave his life for us to be able to experience life. Period. What do you do with that this morning? Would you bow with me as we pray? Before we pray, I just want you to think with your eyes closed, what is your life worth? What is your life worth? $100,000? $1 million? What price have you put on your life? Jesus reminds us today that your life is worth more than everything this world has to offer. You could have it all. You could have money and cars and fame and success, but in the end, still not really know what life is all about. Jesus says, you know what you're worth to me? My own life. As he laid himself on the cross, he wasn't a hapless victim. He was a willing participant, willing to sacrifice himself for you and for me. Are you willing to lose your life? Are you willing to trust what Jesus said, that even though it seems impossible, paradoxical, are you willing to trust that he offers true life? Maybe you realize that in holding on to your life, you've been striving desperately to be accepted by God. Today, Jesus is telling you, stop trying to save yourself. You can't. You don't have to, because he has already done it. Maybe you're desperately holding on to what little bit of your life you can, thinking that God is okay with sharing it with you. Jesus is saying, don't do that. It can never work with God and anything. It has to be God, period. Are you ready to get off the treadmill? Tired of chasing the elusive American dream? Has your life gotten more and more out of control without you even realizing it? Are you wishing you could do that over? The great news is you can. Starting today, lay it all down this morning and come to Jesus and find